RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
A little bit deeper into the season, and we know a little bit more about each of the teams. Welcome to this Tuesday, September 25th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Well, we talk all things football, college football, NFL, players, teams, coaches, schemes. That's what we do here at Landry, the Landry Football Podcast, and on LandryFootball.com. Got a lot to react to today. Gosh, so many games in college football, as I mentioned. As we get deeper into the season, you begin to learn a little bit more. And, you know, people have snap reactions to what happens from one week to the next. It's almost comical that the people are claiming, I did a whole piece last week about this, but it is amazing how, you know, people just react strictly to the moment. I know that's kind of the world we live in today, but it is amazing how people just don't realize that they're embarrassing themselves by overreacting to one moment. But I tell you what I do is, and people ask me all the time, how do I evaluate teams and look at teams throughout the course of the season? Well, there's a number of things I look at when I look at teams. When I grade teams, I evaluate a number, about 20 different categories, and I factor in the game results and the quality of the opponents and the venues. And, you know, the final checkpoint for me is, on film, how do these teams look? How would this team compare right now if they lined up, you know, team A and team B? How would that play out? That's important. You never know what's going to happen on a given day. But I always use the theory, hey, if they play 10 times, what would happen? And I think that gives me an idea. That's my checkpoint. But things develop through the course of the season. You hear me say all the time, you never stay the same. You either get better or you get worse. So as I'm watching the early stages, well, we're actually a quarter of the way through the college season. Hard to believe that is the case, but it is. You're starting to get a feel for certain teams. We're going to kind of adjust things and tell you a little bit about where we are. Every week is a learning process for all of these teams. Everybody. And then, of course, we're through 3 weeks in the NFL. Not quite a quarter through that season yet. We're learning a little bit about more of those teams. So we're going to get into that. We've got a couple of questions. We've got asked about some coaches and some issues going on around. Been a tough week in the ACC. Some people are unhappy about their coaches. We'll address a couple of those questions. Remind you that if you have a question you want to address here or have me address here, send it to me. LandryFootball.com. Go to contact Chris. Send me a question. I'll address it here right on this podcast. I want to remind you as well, if you haven't joined LandryFootball.com, what are you waiting for? It's football season. Nobody takes you inside the college game and the program better than we do. You can get the free information that's just the general junk, or you can get information from a wealth of knowledge of NFL scouts, coaches, the college level, the NFL level. That's what we provide for you inside the film room. So we take you into a deep dive, and it's very inexpensive. You can try it out for a month, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year. Very, very cheap. It's less than a magazine subscription, and you can get access to information that you cannot get it anywhere else. So check us out at LandryFootball.com. It's also where you can catch this podcast every Tuesday and Thursday, and the Wednesday podcast. We'll have that tomorrow, the Rush the Field podcast. You can catch as well. If you are going to some of these games, boy, do we have a special for you. We're going to tell you about it a little bit, but Vivid Seats is where you want to go. They are the best in terms of giving you the night out. Whether you want to see one of these great games, we've got Ohio State, Penn State this week. You got your favorite NFL game. Maybe you're not into that, but you've got a favorite band that's not for driving distance or where you can get, or you're going to be out of town. Whether it's the concert, show, or sporting event, Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets at all live events. I've used them. They're phenomenal. Just go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. We're going to tell you a little bit about more of them in a little bit. But remember, Vivid Seats is the place you need to go for all of your ticket information in any live entertainment. All right, let's attack the college football world. As I like to do, I tend to kind of go a little bit how things played out during the course of the weekend, how the games kind of came down during the week. You know, Friday night, I'm going to take you back there. There were a couple of intriguing games. We had those again broken down. We have all these games broken down in depth for you inside the film room. And one of the reasons why we do it is we not just, hey, throw out a prediction. We go in depth. It's 2,500, 3,000 words on matchups and strengths and weaknesses of the teams. You learn more about these teams and the personnel and how they match up. We go into the details of all the NFL games and certainly all of these top college games, 20, 25 a week. We went into the Penn State, Illinois, and what we've talked about with Illinois is how they've gotten a little better on offense, that they're a little bit better team, but they're not nearly where they want to be. Penn State, I thought, played well in the second half, played a little sloppy early on the road. Friday night, you can kind of sense it. Now, they do get an extra day to heal, get ready, and prepare for Ohio State. I expect it to be an unbelievable scene Saturday night in Happy Valley, a whiteout game, an explosive Penn State team that is moving the football well. Miles is an outstanding back. McSorley is phenomenal. Defensively, they're still not where they need to be. Neither is Ohio State, by the way. They're talented, but not been as consistent. But it's going to be a lot of fun. And boy, if you have not been to Penn State for a game, you have not been to State College, it's one of the real treasures that I think people know about it. But you see the stadium, but the drive up there is only one way in, one way out. And you think, where am I? I mean, just a bunch of farms and dairy farms, and what is this? And then out pops this incredible hunk of steel called a stadium, and it's going to be electric on Saturday. But to their performance, not all that impressive, even tweeted out, and you can follow me on Twitter while watching some of these games. Not all that impressive in the first half, but really started to get things squared away in the second half. Washington State played USC well, thought they had a great chance to win, and they did. USC, to their credit, found a way to win. Big win for Clay Helton. I don't know if he's going to win enough down the stretch to save his job or not. You know, who knows? It could be another Pac-12 South title again for them. There's a lot of mediocrity in the Pac-12 on the South end. I mean, there's really not what I would call a very good team. Somebody's got to win it. Maybe it is USC. They certainly are the most talented team. Defensively, USC could not stop Washington State at all. To their credit, they were able to score enough against a Washington State defense that's having trouble stopping people. Into Saturday's action, the early games, Nebraska's got a problem. We know, no doubt, that without Martinez, they're not nearly the same type of offense. Look, Michigan was outstanding. They're playing with a little more confidence. The defense is playing well. The offense is starting to find somewhat of a rhythm. We're going to see going forward how much better Michigan is. But they've certainly got a few games under their belt, and they're playing better ball. Nebraska does have a problem. And look, this is not a situation that's a quick fix. And I'm going to explain why. Scott Frost comes in with a lot of hype and a lot of, he fits our profile. He's one of our own. I get it. Scott has one way he's learned how to coach offense, and he doesn't have the personnel to do it. And he's going to have some hellacious recruiting classes to get it to where he wants it. The job of a coach that's coming into a program is to kind of change the culture, improve the way that they practice, prepare, the discipline, the focus, the energy, all those things need to be upgraded. Because when you take over a program where a coach has been fired, there's something that was wrong, something that needs fixing. That's what he's got to do. But he also has to recruit well. But one of the things that he's going to have to do, he's going to have to coach better. He's going to have to learn how to adjust better. And I don't share the opinion that everybody just says slam dunk hire. Well, it's a slam dunk hire because he's a really good coach that happens to be a Nebraska alum. I don't expect championships from Scott Frost at Nebraska. I expect them to eventually get to where Wisconsin is right now, where they can maybe be the program in the west of the Big Ten. But I do not look for Nebraska to compete for national titles now or anytime in the future. That's just not the type of program that they are, and I don't see them recruiting at that level. We'll see if that is something he can do. But if he can recruit a top five class, then we can start to see a little bit of what potentially he could do. But I don't know that I see that. Not based upon what's happened thus far, just based upon, you know, I think that you have to be flexible, you have to understand what you're doing, and you have to be able to adjust and modify the way you approach things. I think Scott is, you know, certainly you could see he's a little bit embarrassed. And he's talking a lot about we've hit rock bottom and all that. Scott, you don't know where this season's going, buddy. Just keep your nose to the grindstone. I know you got to answer tough questions, but things are not going very well there. And you just got to fight through it. You know, much in the same way of what's going on in Knoxville, Tennessee. We know it's been a big-time cluster in Knoxville. Bad administration, bad coaching hires, and a bad football program for a long time, to where a generation of football fans don't even know that Tennessee was good. Jeremy Pruitt is proven to be a really good recruiter as an assistant. Let me say this again, just like I've explained the Ed Orgeron phenomenon, why people thought, well, he's a great recruiter. Boy, as a head coach, he'll take care of that. It's completely different recruiting as a head coach as it is as an assistant. I don't know that Jeremy Pruitt's going to be a great recruiter as a head coach at Tennessee. He might. But it will depend upon how well he hires as a staff. Because Jeremy Pruitt has got one visit into a kid's home. Ed Orgeron has got one visit into a kid's home. That's what you get as a head coach. As an assistant coach, you can outwork people. And you can do things that you can't do as a head coach. So, it remains to be seen whether Jeremy could get the type of players that they're going to need to compete. There's no doubt culture change, attitude change needs to be taking place. I think what's really disappointing in Knoxville as we sit here today is their fans look at that and say, we weren't even competitive against Florida. Now, that's not all on Butch Jones. Okay, Butch Jones made a mess of the program and the talent level's not good. The fact that they couldn't even compete with Florida, I mean, could not even compete. The fact that Tennessee is not only looking up at Florida, they're looking so far up at Georgia, who they play this week, they can't even see them. They're looking up as a program to Kentucky. Now, the program, that's an illustration of what he inherited, but it's also an illustration that he's never been a head coach before. How is he going to deal with this? This is not the same as, well, when Nick Saban was at Alabama, he was 6-6. That's a different situation. Jeremy hasn't done anything as a head coach. We don't know that he's going to be successful. Therein lies the issue and one of the problems I had. While I think Jeremy can be a good coach at Tennessee, it's one of the problems. It's one of the problems administrator. Everybody loved the Philip Fulmer hire as athletic director. Well, because they were a fractured administration, and they got one of their own. Oh, we got it. Oh, Philip, he's, you know, bleeds orange. That's great. Okay. But Philip really wasn't very effective in luring a proven head coach to Knoxville. And I think if there was a program that needed some stability in terms of a head coach, a guy that's done it before, proven it, and is hungry to do it again, That's what Tennessee needed to get, and they didn't get it. Whether they couldn't afford it, whether they didn't have the right guy doing the search, that's all debatable. But the bottom line is they've got an unproven head coach who may or may not be a good head coach, who may or may not be a great recruiter as a head coach. My sense is he'll be pretty good. But you better recruit the best class in the country for about 5 years in a row to equal what's going on in Georgia. I'm not wanting to sound the alarms here, but as I said last week, or after the Florida loss to Kentucky, Dan Mullen is a good coach, a proven coach. He's going to have to prove that he can recruit as well as Kirby Smart, or else he ain't going to look as good of a coach when he gets beat by Georgia, you know, 4 out of 5 years. Okay, now, with that as your scope, let's look at where Tennessee is. As far down under the total, as down the totem pole as Tennessee is, looking up at not only Florida, but certainly at Georgia. They got a long way to go. They got a long head start. And right now, they do things administratively better at Georgia because of Kirby Smart. And Tennessee doesn't do it quite as well. They don't have as they have money. They don't spend it. They haven't used the resources quite as well. We'll see how well it does. People say, well, Kirby Smart wasn't a head coach. But no, he wasn't. And there's risk with that. But Kirby, if you understand and know the guys, Kirby's got a lot more polish. Kirby's a lot brighter guy in terms of putting things in place. I think Jeremy is a really good coach. I think he's a behind-the-scenes grunt worker, hard-nosed, tough. I don't know that he has the skills to do anything close with what Kirby's doing at Georgia. I don't know that. I'd be lying if I said I did. I don't know. We won't know for a while. He deserves every opportunity to do it. But I'd be lying to you if I told you that I strongly felt like, hey, boy, this is going to be great. Look out. I think Tennessee can get better. I think they can get a lot better. I don't know if they can catch Georgia. I don't know if they can catch Georgia at all. And time, only time's going to tell that. Speaking of Georgia, not all that impressed breaking down the tape against Missouri. Made a lot of mistakes, a lot of discipline issues. You know, you can look at it a couple of ways. It's a teaching moment, a learning moment for Kirby to show his team, this is not going to cut it. We're not going to achieve our goals if this is how we're going to play. It's still a win on the road against pretty good offense, pretty good road in the SEC, but it wasn't. By Georgia standards, it was not that impressive of a game. They're not going to be challenged in a lot of games. I've said it before, and I'll say it now. Pretty clear to me, there's not even a close number two in the East or the West of the SEC. It was Georgia and Alabama at the beginning of the year, and it's Georgia and Alabama now, and it's not even close. I don't know who the second-best team in the West is. It doesn't really matter. LSU, Mississippi State, Auburn. Distant second. That game in Baton Rouge with Alabama is not going to be as close as people think. Second best team in the East of the SEC? Well, I mean, right now, certainly the flavor of the day is Kentucky. Can Kentucky continue and win all their games except Georgia? They're not going to beat Georgia, but can they win the rest of their games? I don't know. We'll see. Right now, I just need to see if they can beat South Carolina, who they've had success against. We'll see if they can do something that they've not been able to do for some time, and that's deal with prosperity, success. Going the road to A&M, not going to be easy. Vanderbilt, Missouri, then you get Georgia. I think they'll beat Tennessee. I think they'll beat Middle, and I think they'll beat Louisville. But the stretch here of the next five games will determine it. Not Georgia. I think if they can beat South Carolina, then they got to go on the road to A&M. Then they got Vanderbilt and Missouri. Those four games. And then you win the rest of them except Georgia. You know, it's as good as you can get since Bear Bryant was coaching at Kentucky and won an SEC football championship there. Long way to go. And yes, there's a big gap between Georgia and Kentucky. I hope that game on November 3rd is as big as it looks now. That's going to be up to Kentucky to make it so. Notre Dame looks like they found their quarterback. Ian Book, you know, I can tell you that Brian Kelly liked him a lot, but wasn't as comfortable early. Wimbush kind of moved the team won the team early. This is Book's team now. You talk about a team that's going to get a lot of publicity if they're able to beat Stanford this week, because their schedule is very favorable. This Notre Dame team is not a great team at all. I would kind of put it in the category of the Brian's team that they got blown out by Alabama, and that, you know, Stanford, Virginia Tech's a winnable game on the road, absolutely. Although Virginia Tech's going to play a lot better. Navy is always troubling. Northwestern will be tricky. You know, folks, Florida State's not good. Syracuse is having a good year. That's not a game that Notre Dame should lose. And at USC, again, shame on Notre Dame if they don't go on the road and roll USC. So I tell you, they are the favorite in every game the rest of the season, maybe even, you know, close to double-digit favorites in some of them if they beat Stanford this week. Huge, huge game for the Irish. Maybe the surprise of the early window games was Purdue blowing the doors off of BC. But, you know, if you get an early lead on BC, they don't have a passing attack. They run the football, play good defense. If you can score on them, spread them out. That is a style matchup that killed them. Clemson continues to take care of business, but we've talked about it all year long, haven't we? Trevor Lawrence, got to get him in there. Here's the deal. Kelly Bryant's a good quarterback. Clemson's capable of winning every game this year with Kelly Bryant at quarterback. Just like we've talked about, Alabama's capable of beating every team on their schedule with Jalen Hurts as quarterback. But for Clemson to win a national title, to give their team the best chance to win in the national playoffs, to get there and then win, they need better quarterback play. They need more of a passing game, and that's going to come with Trevor Lawrence, or it's not going to come at all. He gives them their best chance. No guarantee, he gives them their best chance. And in order to do that, they've got a window here where they can work their way through, let him learn how to run the offense, protect the ball. That's Syracuse. I know Syracuse beat him last year. I know Syracuse is playing well. They don't beat the doors off at Syracuse. It tells you where Clemson is in terms of a focus, because they're a lot better. Wake, NC State, Florida State, we know. Louisville at BC. You throw the football on BC. You know, Duke, South Carolina in November, toughest games. They steamroll through their schedule with Trevor Lawrence. Let him work through some of the issues. Get him ready for the ACC championship game and the berth in the national playoffs. That's what they're doing. That's the reason why the move is made. Long overdue. We said the same thing applies to Alabama. We know Alabama's made that decision from week one. Tua is rolling. This Alabama offense looks unstoppable. The defense, you know, the defensive line is not playing great yet. I thought they played well against Ole Miss. They've got some leverage issues against the run. There's some youth issues there that were exposed a little bit against A&M, but this is, relatively speaking, folks, this is a defense that's got a lot of talent, that's getting a little bit better in some aspects every week. But they've got a lot of areas of improvement. That's why Nick Saban's constantly going on his tangents about, we're not that good, you're saying this, you're saying that. It's baby steps with this team. Baby steps with this team defensively. If there's one area, well, there are a couple of areas I think they can get better. They can clean up things in the kicking game. Place kicking was better last week. Got to become more consistent in that aspect in the punting game. Just got to do a really good job of that going forward. Two, I think they've got to become better running the football with a lead. I mean, they have to. They have to find a way to just eat clock, and as I said, not be focused on getting the 5-0 and the point total, but maybe getting the 4-0 and just compressing this game, taking the air out of the game. They've got to do that. I think that is where Alabama is going to stamp their mark on a championship year. That's going to finish, round out this team. I think the whole let's go out and score 50 points thing If you're going up and down the field, the defense will be vulnerable. I've explained that in the past. That's fundamental football. I think they've got to become better at possessing the football and being dominant running the football more. They do that better, then it's an unstoppable offense. I know it looks unstoppable now, but I mean unstoppable for anybody this year. Texas, big win over TCU. I give a lot of credit to Texas. They played well. I had a concern that TCU coming off that Ohio State game, I don't know, you'd say they looked ahead. That's a little bit disrespectful to Texas, but they didn't play the same game. And I know that Ohio State's better than Texas. I think that becomes the difficulty of playing tough games back-to-back. Tough games back-to-back for young guys is a problem. It was a problem. Texas is playing with some confidence now. Let's see what they do with the rest of the year. Now they got to go to beat a Kansas State team that's not very good. They've not had success in Manhattan. Need to go there and beat them. Texas, that's what you've got to do. You've got to start to make statements. South Carolina getting ready. Game against Kentucky. Played pretty well. We'll get into the breakdowns on Thursday, but I think South Carolina's got a little bit more playmakers. I think Kentucky's better at the line of scrimmage. Gonna get into that game. Florida State just gets off the mat against Northern Illinois. What a tough run it is to, hey, let's find a way to get us a win against Northern Illinois, to pair it up against a Samford win to get us off the mat. West Virginia proving this Kansas State team is not very good, and West Virginia is way talented offensively, causing a lot of problems. Baylor getting better and better. Kansas got their comeuppance. Ohio State, it's impressive. Urban's back. Move forward. The story of the day is Old Dominion beating Virginia Tech. I admit it was on my list of priority games, not real high. It quickly moved up, though, and made it under my list of Bank of Six TVs. Tech just wasn't ready to play. I think the thing that just shocked me was how Old Dominion just ran the football on Bud Foster's defense. Ran the football right down their throat. It's a case they didn't take them seriously, didn't respect them, and that's what happens. You even heard Justin Fuente refer to that. Expect a different team. Virginia Tech plays Notre Dame in a couple of weeks. Don't be surprised. And again, you don't have the same team every week. Every week you got a different team. You never stay the same. You either get better or you get worse. Expect Virginia Tech to be better. We talked a little bit about Florida-Tennessee from Tennessee's standpoint. From Florida's standpoint, confidence win, take care of business, see the quarterback playing a little bit better. I don't know that Florida's good. I just know that they were that much better than Tennessee, and it wasn't even close as a score. Arkansas is beyond bad. They're worse than Tennessee. Auburn's still not playing well up front. Now, the one thing that Auburn, you've heard me say it, they do. They get better at running the football as the year goes along. It's still early. I expect Auburn to be a good running team by the end of the year. If they're not, it'll be the first one under Gus Malzahn. I just don't think Auburn right now is that good of a team. And I think people are getting way... how can I put it? Just way out of whack in how they're looking at Auburn, how they're looking at LSU because LSU beat Auburn. I'm not that impressed. I was impressed with how Kentucky really beat up Mississippi State at the line of scrimmage. I was particularly impressed with how Kentucky blocked that Mississippi State defensive front. It's a talented group. Really impressed. Like the determination, I want to see Kentucky play with success and build off of it. It's great that you can kind of put the Florida mess behind you. You beat a good team in Mississippi State. Now you got to go and beat South Carolina or else, you know, people say, there you go again. This could be a special year for Kentucky. But you got to win the games that you're capable of winning. And this is a year in which you beat Florida. You beat Mississippi State. You've had success against South Carolina. And quite frankly, everybody else on your schedule other than Georgia is beatable. Let's see what you can do with it. Really surprised and impressed by Texas Tech taking care of business against Oklahoma State. playing a little bit better defensively. Not a fan of Kingsbury in terms of how his teams play week in and week out. I was impressed this past week. He really did a good job, had his team prepared. Indiana, I thought, played pretty well. Michigan State, pretty well. Michigan State has made a couple of big plays in the passing game, ran the football a little bit better. Michigan State's not the team that I think people thought. They're a good team. But this is a year where Michigan's got to beat this team. Michigan's definitely better. We'll see if they can win the game when they meet up. Wisconsin-Iowa, really good game, physical game. Big win for Wisconsin. They pulled one out. Iowa had the game in their hands and just couldn't finish it off. I thought both of these teams played very well at the line of scrimmage. Very physical. It's a fun game to watch. When I looked at it, I thought, who's going to make enough plays on offense? Hornibrook, give him a lot of credit. He was poised, didn't flinch, and he made plays when they absolutely has to get the team in the end zone. Just would have been a very difficult loss for Wisconsin to bounce, to couple that with the BYU loss. It's not a bad team at all. I thought for much of the game was as good, if not a little bit better, but they just couldn't finish it off. It's been a problem with them. Speaking of not finishing off, the game of the week was Oregon-Stanford. What a great game. What a great atmosphere in Autzen. Talked about last week some of the issues in the Pac-12 in terms of programs. You don't have these type of games. That's why I did the whole podcast, because they were having this type of game and anticipating a great atmosphere in Stanford, Oregon, and Autzen. This is what's great about the Pac-12, but you don't see this very often. A big game like this, a big game between Washington, Oregon, these are really good. You get a big game with Utah, Rice Eccles, that's pretty special. But you don't see the big game atmosphere, the big game feel in many of these Pac-12 games. It was Saturday night. Oregon really did a good job of attacking Stanford's defense, finding open guys, showing their speed advantage. Thought they did a really good job. Did not think Stanford did a very good job offensively attacking in certain areas of Oregon's defense that I thought were vulnerable. But Stanford never quit. They don't get this win if Oregon doesn't shoot themselves in the foot. I thought that they had some opportunities late in that game with time management to slow down that pace, and this is part of what you've got to learn how to do in game management. You've got to learn how to run the four-minute offense and not always just the up-tempo two-minute offense. You've got to bleed that clock before snapping it. You've got to take advantage of your advantages that you have in that game. It's not the question of running it on the last play. You got to protect the football. But I thought if you go back to every possession, they could have milked it more to where they could have been avoiding having to run it that last play. But in terms of running it, got a problem with it running it in that situation. Got to protect the football. Most important thing is protecting the football. And it gave Stanford the life, and it was the difference. Tough, tough way to lose it. And you wonder how that's going to affect the team the rest of the way. Here's what I learned about the game. That Oregon's pretty good. I knew the quarterback was really good, and I know they had playmakers. But they can play with anybody. Can't wait to watch them play Washington. Those three teams are very good. Problem is, none of them are playoff caliber. Now, I'm not saying that one of them can't get in. Certainly could get voted in. None of the teams in the Pac-12 are among the top four teams in the country. Washington take care of business against Arizona State was expected. One of the big rivalries that maybe people are not aware of, that's one of the more underrated rivalries in the country, is Oregon-Washington. I mean, it is a really don't like you. And, you know, a lot of it is the reputation of the Pac-12 out west. You know, whatever, dude. We're like California cool, dude. No big deal. That's not the way it is in Oregon-Washington. Now, that game is on October 13th in Autzen. Now, Washington's down a game, obviously losing to Stanford. Washington, be favored in that, but big game. Going to be a lot of fun. Very heated rivalry. That's the Oregon, to put this in perspective, Washington-Oregon rivalry is like Auburn, Georgia. It's just locale, proximity, don't like one another. I know people associate Georgia, Florida, and people associate Auburn, Alabama more. Auburn, Georgia, big rivalry, don't like each other. As they say down south, they don't jee-haw too well. Well, that's kind of the way Washington, Oregon is. All right, before we get into the NFL, I want to tell you about good friends at Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing your favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on your favorite team. With Vivid Seats, you can attend that concert, show, sporting event, whatever. Whatever is your choice, you can attend it at the best price of best price available. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events that you want to go to. You can sort them by price. You can look for seats in the section and row of your choice. That's what's great about them, is you can really say, listen, I want to go here. What are my options? What's the best price? You've got everything at your fingertips with Vivid Seats. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive 10% off your first purchase with the Vivid Seats to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code INFLUENCE, INFLUENCE, upper caps, for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater tickets, anything that you want, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Vivid Seats, it's where I go. It's where I recommend you go. Use Vivid Seats to check out some of the big games that we're going to be talking to you about this weekend in college football, which includes the biggest one, the Ohio State-Penn State game. How about Stanford-Notre Dame? Both going on at the same time, by the way. So you can't be at both games at the same time. I mean, you can buy tickets from Vivid Seats for both of them, but you can't split yourself and be at both places. But if you figure out how to do that, let me know. But those are the highlight games. Or maybe it's an NFL game on the docket this week that intrigues you. Maybe that's it, huh? Maybe you want to go for the Week 4 matchups. Maybe it's Minnesota and Los Angeles. Go out to the West Coast. Baltimore, Pittsburgh. Kansas City, Denver, Monday night. Anyway, Vivid Seats is where you want to go. Hey, here's a question I want to answer before we get into some NFL discussion of what we had over the weekend. Jeff asks, I think Jeff is a North Carolina fan, and he is not happy with what's going on there, understandably. So he wants my thoughts on Ryan Day, Dave Aranda, and Lane Kiffin. I think he wants me generically to talk about them and maybe as potential head coaching candidates. So I'll take the leap that that's what he's looking for. Ryan Day, of course, the interim head coach for Ohio State while Urban Meyer was out, is a bright, young up-and-coming coach, which, listen, I think the interim role helped him to deal with some of the press issues and all of that that you have to deal with as a head coach. I think he's going to be a head coach soon. I think there's a great chance he's a head coach this year. Is North Carolina the right fit? I'm not sure that that would be the case. I don't know how interested he would be. The whole coach in interim is interesting. Or coach in waiting scenario at Ohio State is a preemptive strike to try to keep him. I think it's pretty clear from inside the Ohio State administration that things are not going well with Urban Meyer and that president. And I don't know how things are going to go. Urban Meyer has had a background of kind of bailing out of a situation. I know Ohio State's his dream job. It's home. I think he wants to be there long term. But I also know that he has a history of saying, I'm done with it. That's it. So having Ryan Day in position makes some sense, which that simply means is it would probably make Ryan think before taking a job like North Carolina. I think he would probably hold out for something better, and I think he's capable of getting something better. And if he doesn't, I think he'll wait until that right opportunity comes along. And I don't want to speak for Ryan. Ryan's a good young coach who's been around some of the NFL landscapes, may have an interest in going back there, not as a head coach, but maybe getting, I think, eventually being a head coach is what he'd love to do. But I think there's some possible interest there going the coordinator route. But I do think head coach in college is where his next step is. I just don't know where, and we'll see. Dave Aranda, highest paid coach coordinator in the country. Another guy that is not long for the job. I think Dave will be moving on relatively quickly. And I think there are two options there. Head coach in college, coordinator in the NFL. I did speak to Green Bay on his behalf this past offseason. Had he gotten offered that job, he would have taken it. He didn't. They wanted to go with someone with more NFL experience. Dave is doing a great job. Again, not going to leave for just any job. He's more important to LSU than the head coach. So they're going to make sure that they do the best they can to keep him. Again, going back to the same situation with Ryan and Dave, is a North Carolina job, you know, one that would intrigue him? It might. North Carolina's got really good facilities. I think it has a lot of potential. And, you know, if they feel like they're going to get the commitment to build a first-rate program without having the pressure of, you know, you better win immediately and you can build it your own way and have time to do it, that's what North Carolina can provide. So I don't know, quite frankly, if they could get either one of those two. I think it certainly would be two good candidates. There are others, but I think those would be some interesting guys. You also asked about Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin's a completely different guy. Lane Kiffin, what people don't understand about Lane Kiffin, and Lane has his fans, he has his detractors. I like Lane, mainly because I know his dad so well, and I like Lane. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think there's really no difference between Lane and Steve Spurrier in terms of both are kind of a smart alecks. But, you know, there's nothing that Lane did that Steve Spurrier didn't do on a regular basis. But Steve Spurrier was a much better head coach. Lane Kiffin is not very organized. This is something that people don't know. And it's why, even though he's very creative as an offensive play caller, Lane doesn't have a good big picture feel, and that's part is lacking in his head coaching ability. He's also not very organized. So, yeah, he's doing a pretty good job at FAU, but he's got more resources than the rest of the programs in the league. He can recruit, you know, a little bit better players in that area. He's got a lot of talent. But if you watch him, and if you watch him being a head coach everywhere he's been, his teams have been undercoached. He's been outcoached many times in many games. I don't think that's a really good fit as much as I'd like to see him get a shot. And I certainly would look at a place that's looking to make a name, and that's certainly North Carolina. I think they're better options, but here's what you get with him, a guy that will recruit and a guy that's going to coach really well. Now, do you want a guy like Lane Kiffin that's got a history of recruiting and breaking rules, and you're North Carolina and you've been in all sorts of trouble? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense there. I don't think that's a really good fit. So hope that answers your question there, Jeff. Also, I'm a big Georgia Tech fan. I'm tired of seeing Coach Paul Johnson struggling with my team. The triple option offense seems to be less and less effective with time. Always struggled against bigger defenses, and even when the offense is running perfect, the defense always seems to be lagging behind. In over 10 years, we haven't had a top 25 defense. I think it's time to move on from Paul Johnson. So what are some of the up-and-coming coaches that could be good fits? Well, do you think Mel Tucker is a good fit? Well, I don't know that Mel would take that job. First of all, Georgia Tech is a job. They've got to make some decisions administratively. One of the things that the reason why Paul got the job is that Paul could, in theory, get more out of personnel, lesser personnel. So I think Georgia Tech needs to find their David Cutcliffe. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of those guys around that are really good coaches that are going to get a certain type of guy that can fit in academically with the university. But he's not going to be the best players, but we can make these teams competitive. If you look at the service academies, which is where Paul came from, you see that at Army and at Navy, they can compete with bigger time programs. It's not Paul's offense that's less effective. It's quite frankly the talent level and how they teach it. It's not as good at Navy as it is at Navy right now. And quite frankly, it's not as good as it is at West Point. I do think there are limitations, but I think there are limitations with a lot of things. At Georgia Tech, you're going to have to find somebody that schematically on both sides of the ball can get more out of less, because you're not going to get big-time players. Mel Tucker would not be a good fit. Mel Tucker is a guy that does a really good job with his aggressive style, with really good talents. I don't think he's a guy that would be a fit with lesser talent. I don't think he's a coach up guys. I think he's a guy that does a good job with really good talent, but I don't think he can take less and make more of it. So I don't see that as a really good fit personally. I think there are some good coaches, and Ahmed, I'd be glad to address some of who those guys would be really good fits in the appropriate time if Georgia Tech decided to make a move on Paul Johnson. This is off the disappointing year. I feel your frustration and certainly understand it. All right, let's get into some NFL conversations. Big win for the Saints on the road in Atlanta. Said it would come down to red zone play, and by God, if it didn't. Some key plays down the stretch. Atlanta didn't make defensively. The Saints did. Defenses couldn't step up and stop either one. A problem. It's going to be a problem in that division. It's probably going to come down to New Orleans. I think New Orleans' defense can get better. Atlanta got concerns because they've lost some key guys to injury. The Saints pass rush has got to improve. They can't continue to outscore people. They're 2-1. The Bucs get a loss with a big win by the Steelers last night. The Bucs are 2-1. You know, the Bucs bubble will gradually begin to burst, or the air will be let out. It's not a great defense. Fitzpatrick played well, a lot of energy. That it gives them their best chance to win going forward. But I think overall their roster won't be good enough to sustain and be as strong a playoff contender as maybe the early start of the season might indicate. Tough loss for San Francisco, losing Jimmy Garoppolo. This is going to make them a team that is going to be picking fairly high again. It's a pretty good roster. Tough break for him. Kansas City continues to play so well on offense. Defensively, stepped up, made some big plays. I want to see them deep into the season play well, play consistent, protect the football, and play good defense before I can buy into the Chiefs as a do some damage in the playoff type of team. I tell you who's played well and not getting a lot of credit for is Miami. Tannehill's like 10-1 in his last 11 starts, or 11-1 now. I know the Raiders are struggling, but Miami's playing good ball. We're going to learn this week. We're going to get down into this matchup on the website and here on the podcast, the Dolphins against the Patriots, who struggled to get it done against New England. Get New England early. Miami needs to find a way to win this game this week against the Patriots, because when it comes November and New England's the better team, you want to have a couple of wins ahead of them to challenge that division. You better jump on New England early. Dolphins off to a good start. Patriots are not. They need to. If they can win this game, they've got a shot to at least make it a division race. Without it, it's going to be more of the same what we've seen. You never know what you're going to see on any given Sunday. Buffalo going to Minnesota. How about Buffalo? The worst team in the league, most people thought. Minnesota, really good. Got the Rams on the road next week. Looking ahead, not ready to play. You know, mail it in. Yeah, you can mail this in. Buffalo just tore apart this Vikings defense, limb for limb. You never know. Philadelphia getting it done late. Carson Wentz makes a difference. This team will get better and better as the year goes along. Green Bay, that North is going to be interesting. We just talked about Minnesota. I still think Minnesota is a good team. I didn't think they showed up last week. They and Chicago are the most intriguing teams. I don't know that I trust Detroit, even with their win over New England. I think that would be interesting to see if they can get better, but I'm not quite sure I'm buying it yet. Green Bay is limited. They're definitely limited. With Aaron Rodgers not being healthy, they're not going to go as deep as they could if he were healthy. Cincinnati, Carolina. Cincinnati's playing good ball. Carolina's got some offensive line issues. Both these teams are pretty good. Surprised by how well Tennessee played defensively. took it to Jacksonville. Really good performance, really good game plan. Big time win on the road for Tennessee. Everyone's excited, should be. Still think Jacksonville's got a better roster, but you go on the road, beat Jacksonville, you've done something. Denver, Baltimore, we'll kind of see this Denver team will be good defensively, but you know they're not going to be dynamic enough. I don't know that they're a great team. I don't know who's best in the AFC West. Denver's going to be in the race, but they're not a great team by any stretch. Baltimore, good performance at home. We kind of called it at LandryFootball.com. We thought this game might would go. If you check out breakdowns, we'll kind of give you a feel for how some of the matchups may enhance one's team chances or not in the game. Houston is as disappointing as any team thus far this year. Off to a really bad start and in danger of just running themselves out of the game this year. Just completely out of the picture. Giants get one. We'll see if they can start to get a little bit of a run here. Chargers, not a bad-looking team. They've had a couple of games in which they've just lost to some really good teams, lost to some really good offenses. The Rams are playing the most complete football right now in the league. Playing good defensively, keeping people out of the red zone, and offensively really taking it to people. The Bears did not play well, but found a way to beat the Cardinals, unlike the Vikings. Dallas thought they'd have a hard time against Seattle. Seattle, must-win situation. Not impressed with either team in this game, but definitely Dallas is going to have a hard time maintaining any consistency because of the same issues that they've had in the past continue this year. Seattle, I think, can get back in the NFC West race, but everybody's chasing the Rams. And clearly, I think the Rams, if they're able to win at home against Minnesota, will kind of cement themselves as the early favorite through the first quarter of the year as the best team in the league. Talked a little bit about Detroit. Thought Detroit had a really good game plan. Were very well prepared against New England. Sustainability for the Lions. That's what we're looking for. It's a game-changer type performance, but what can they do going forward? I think Pittsburgh found themselves a little bit. That was kind of a must-win, come-together win. It's clear they're going to deal with the distractions with Le'Veon Bell, with finally put them on the trading block. We'll see what happens there. They move forward and see where it goes. It's as simple as that. They've got to get out of the who's not there and who's doing this and that and just play ball. And Mike Tomlin's got to take control of it. And I thought they did a pretty good job of responding, as I thought they would against Tampa, at least play well, and they found a way to get a win. Hey, we're going to be – a couple of notes. Again, a reminder for you to check us out at LandryFootball.com because we're going to have the detailed breakdowns of all of this. Every game, we – on the NFL side, we take every game, we'll give – film room notes and analysis, and we'll tell you who's graded out the best to this point in the year for every team. So as you get through that, you really know who's playing well and who's doing what. The college scene, same thing. Break down every week, each college program, how they look on film, kind of get you looking ahead towards next week as well. All the film room game breakdowns, where we tell you from the matchups, explaining the strategy, the X's and O's, the personnel matchups. One-stop shopping football, folks, taking you inside the film room so that you can see and learn the game from a coaching and scouting viewpoint. That's what we do for you at LandryFootball.com. So check us out today for less than a magazine subscription. You can get access to your own scouting and coaching department, college and NFL scene. So check us out. We'll see you on Thursday as we break down the weekend's game, an upcoming big weekend in both the college and NFL scene. We'll have it all for you at LandryFootball.com and on the Landry Football Podcast. See you then.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.